Program is paid for by Little John Financial Services. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now presented by Little John Financial Services. It's David Little John with True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang, it is that time of the week again. It is time for the True Wealth Radio Show on this greatest Tuesday you have had all week. I'm your host, Dave Little John, in studio back again.
Matt Dixon.
Man, I'm stoked to have you back in the saddle.
Perfect.
Oh, yes. Man. Last week it was all about year-end planning, and Justin subbed in, and he did a great job.
Nice.
But, you know, our listeners have gotten so used to you that I'm hearing things like, maybe you should just not go on the show and it could just be Justin and Matt.
Mm.
And then my feelings are hurt, and I'll get over it because this may be what the public really wants. We'll see.
We will see. We will see. Well, hey, I was swamped today, and I know that you were in your office pondering all things finance today.
It's true.
And as you sat there and pondered, I'm curious, what revelating thought did you have where the light bulb just turned on or maybe flickered on and you had...
Yeah, kind of flicker might be right. Uh-huh. Kind of trying.
Yeah, your ground might not have been great, but it's there enough to turn it on and off here. What do you got for me today?
Well, so... what I did was I kind of looked at what's going on. Here we are at the end of the year, and there's going to be a number of things that we'll cover, but I get a lot of people that they still ask, hey, can you explain to me what's going on in the market? And a lot of the chatter is about like the Magnificent Seven, mm-hmm. and a lot of it is about how are we in an AI bubble? And that to me is, well, you know, we'll see, right? Mm-hmm. We'll know kind of afterwards. But there are some things that we can see that are big picture economic behaviors that really could matter to people. And it affects a lot of things in our lives. And what I'm really talking about is the potential for rate cuts that have been on the horizon. There's been discussion, like the Federal Reserve has said, well, is the economy slowing? Do we need to make rate cuts in order to keep things moving forward? You know, for a while, it was lots of inflation, and we had to raise interest rates to slow that down. And now we've started to see kind of the flip side of it. It's been, you know, a few years later, post-COVID, printed a bunch of money. Now we're trying to stabilize prices. We've even seen some prices coming down in some areas of the economy. And when that stuff starts to happen, you get a little, it's called cognitive dissonance, right? You think one thing, but you feel another, or you think things that are in conflict with each other. Like, I feel like maybe things are supposed to be good, but they don't feel good. Why is that? Right?
I know why. Because they keep telling us that things are fine, but they don't feel fine.
Well, that's literally the point. And so I thought today would be a good chance to talk about, why does it feel like there's a disconnect in some areas? What are we seeing in the economy versus what are they telling us? And they is sort of an ambiguous term, right? Like, mm-hmm. you're hearing it through various media sources and you get these data reports like, well, you know, the market's doing great. And then you look around and think, well, why are there layoffs?
That's the great question is, who is they, right?
Hell yeah.
Yeah, that is the question, because we know who Jerome Powell is. Most of us do, right?
Yep.
The head of the
current Federal Reserve chair.
And you know what's interesting?
Tell me.
Ponder this. So we have Jerome Powell who says, oh, the inflation numbers are, you know, they're looking decent, right? He's saying inflation has cooled. Now, the consumer... for a lot of people, they're like, the heck it has, you know, like things are still really expensive. A lot of stuff hurts right now. But Powell says that things are kind of falling in line. But he also, to the last of my knowledge, said, I don't expect a rate cut anytime soon. So to me, that is like the undertone is.
So let me throw something out there for you to ponder at the same time.
Okay.
Why I think this show is still interesting. There is it's kind of like a betting pool. Betting is not a great way to describe it, but in a sense it is.
Well, when you said betting, you piqued my interest.
Right, go on.
What are we betting on?
Okay, you can buy futures Mm-hmm. Now, futures, originally, futures were kind of an interesting and fairly straightforward concept. Imagine you're a farmer and you've planted a bunch of, I don't know, corn, right? You are saying, I expect that I'll have this much corn that I produce by the end of the year. And somebody comes along and says, well, how about I'll pay you now for the harvest when it comes time?
Mm-hmm.
They're buying the future crop. So they're buying a future value, but they're paying in today's pricing. Now, they are also taking on a risk that the crop could be good or it could be bad.
Okay.
And so the farmer is taking on that risk, right? A terrible crop, he may have to deliver at a certain price, and he has a weak crop, and everybody else does too, and the prices go way up, and he now has to deliver at a price below what the market would be in the future. On the flip side, it could be a banner year, could have a huge crop, and delivers and has stuff left over, and you know the pricing goes the other direction. So there's risk for both parties because it's a hedge against a future that's unknown.
Mm-hmm.
People do that with the federal funds rate.
Have you been tracking that at all, or looking into the future at like where the markets are predicting the interest rates to go?
Yeah, it's really interesting because
what we have
is probabilities. We don't have a sure thing. And again, this is sort of based on how the markets are perceiving it by what they're buying. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So what we see right now, if you were to look out about next quarter, so into March of next year, the markets are pricing in about a 50-50 shot for another rate.
Wow, hike. 50-50, huh?
Yeah.
Interesting.
And well, that's why I thought it was interesting when you say, well, hey, you know, Jerome Powell said, like, hey, no rate cuts coming anytime soon.
Mm-hmm.
And the markets hear that, and they go, really? You know, they're not so convicted. I've seen many times where there's like a 90%+ probability of an outcome from the Federal Reserve. And that's the market really forecasting an outcome, and it's most of the time correct.
Right.
Like most of the time.
Yeah, rarely gets it really wrong. But you're saying we've got closer to 50-50 odds. So I was going to guess that it'd be more like 90% chance of a no.
That's precisely why I thought this show would be kind of fun to chat about. Because Matt and I didn't really get to pre-game.
We didn't pre-prep this one, yeah.
Well, I prepped the agenda for our discussion, but you're hearing a real-time discussion between us about what do we see in the economy.
Well,
I think it's fascinating because you and I are also at different stages of life, right? My kids are older, still in the house, but just a different phase. You've got littles, and so what you're buying right now at your stage in the career versus what I'm buying, different stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we see different parts. Matt's like a super manly dude guy. He's all like, I want to go hunting and fishing and stuff. And I'm kind of like a nerd. So I'm like, hey, let me put really cool Christmas lights up. They're different. So we have different takes on this thing.
Okay. I like how we're setting this up. So
when you say to me, hey, this is what I've heard, and I'm kind of shocked that there'd be any kind of rate cut, talk to me a little bit about, just give me the setup for that in your mind.
You know, I talk to a lot of clients, right, and that all come from all different walks of life, and they're always throwing me information. And one of the things that I heard interestingly this week even was this theory that inflation really isn't cooling as much as we think.
Okay.
And it's being driven by the AI infrastructure that's rolling out, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we have this so bear with me here. It's kind of a long tangent, but the theory was, hey, AI like ChatGPT is gobbling tons and tons of energy.
Yeah.
And as they're gobbling up that energy, like that energy isn't free. It has to be paid for, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so we see like here locally, right? Look at the Columbia River and the Snake River, that area, right? So we have dams that are starting to come out, especially like on the Snake River. And we use a lot of those dams to create electricity and power. And there are a lot of data centers along those areas because power tends to be kind of easy to come by. It's close by.
Mm-hmm.
And so these data centers pop up. They demand a lot of power. And then they come in and then they use this power. And then who ends up paying for the higher cost of electricity because there's now a scarcity in it? the consumer, right? And so a lot of people are complaining, wow, my power bill's gone way up. Energy costs have gone way up. And I think it's true. You start looking at people's power bills and it's like, yeah, your power bill has doubled in the last 2 years. And why are you having to pay more? Well, partly because of things like maybe data centers controlling more usage, or maybe, you know, EVs are becoming more common. And so a lot more electricity being used, less gasoline being used. And so you look at this and that can be an inflationary pressure. So it's like, well, are things getting cheaper or are they generally getting more expensive?
Now, hang on. So you're saying the proliferation of things that want to use electricity is inflationary?
Yeah, because we're using more and more of it, and we're ending up bearing the cost. The consumer is on the back end.
Okay, so this is a really interesting. So
It's a theory.
Yeah. So here's the setup question on this one is, because I want to unpack this more.
The theory is AI is driving inflation higher and higher. So maybe the rate cut doesn't make sense.
Okay, I want to make the counterpoint to that argument.
Perfect.
So let's hold this one. We're going to grab a break. We'll come back, and when we do,
I have more points other than just the energy.
Okay, so the
I'm ready to fight
like
this
AI
one.
Is driving inflation.
Yep.
And I'm going to posit the theory that AI is driving deflation.
Oh,
stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Dave Littlejohn
and Matt Dixon.
You got True Wealth on News Radio 92.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Yeah, no, it's changed dramatically.
Yucky land.
Welcome back to the True Wealth Show. Dave Littlejohn in studio with
Matt Dixon.
And reminder, you can grab the podcast. I always like to do that after that first segment. Some folks, if you're just getting in the car, but you didn't catch something, grab the podcast. We'll throw it up on our webpage tomorrow at littlejohnfs.com under the Knowledge Center. And you can just get kind of a snapshot of what we've been talking about. The debate here has been around whether or not
AI is like an inflationary push.
Well, so it's before that, there was this idea that there may or may not be a rate cut. I mean, that's not the market's pricing 50-50 on it out in March. And on the one hand, Jerome Powell, Fed chair, has said, no, we're not going to lower rates in the foreseeable future.
Right.
But the markets don't agree. It's showing some other things. And yet the stock market's been going up. And yet other areas of the economy have been going down.
Right.
And so, Matt, you brought the point up, right? You say AI is an inflationary event.
Yeah.
And I'm just trying to summarize it here, so fill me in if I miss something. But your premise was, hey, AI is this massive consumer of electricity, and there's also been a big push in other areas of the economy like electric vehicles, where we're using more electricity, and so that increase in demand is ultimately going to drive the price up, and that in an energy input cost is one of the most expensive parts of the economy.
Correct.
That's an inflationary input.
Right. And I got a lot more for you.
Okay.
So let's have a good old fashioned debate here, because I think you're taking the other side of the fence.
I'll take the other side. So let's this, by the way, it doesn't mean I necessarily agree, but I'm going to lay out some of the cases here for, I think AI could be deflationary.
Okay.
Here's my use case for it. AI automates a whole lot of things that are otherwise done by people right now. And we're seeing this in a lot of corporate America, where lower end areas in the service sector. So, you know, we're hearing jobs at Amazon and Verizon and that kind of job. Those jobs are going away and being replaced by AI, which means layoffs. Now,
correct.
Layoffs, a lot of us tend to first look at this at a very personal level and say, people are losing their jobs. Their lives must suck now. Well, maybe I'm slightly over-exaggerating, but you know, like what a terrible deal, right? Now they have to go and figure out how to retool because they don't have a job and they got to find some other way to provide for themselves. To which I go, that's all real, and that's a really human way to look at that. It's good to be human beings. But the market looks at this as a data point and says, well, we just took, you know, however many tens or hundreds of thousands of workers and threw them back into the job market because they're no longer employed. If they're back in the job market, that means they're competing for the jobs that are left. And that means that the people they're competing with, they're no longer negotiating for the higher price. The company is negotiating for the lower provider. So it drives wages down, right? Keep in mind, supply and demand is really simple. If there's more supply than there is demand, price goes down. If there's more demand than supply, it's the other way, right? If you really want those concert tickets and they're not available, you got to pay a ton of money to somebody that has them, okay? But if you're trying to scalp tickets and nobody wants to go, like, you got to give those tickets away. They have almost no value. So it's kind of that story too with labor. The value of labor declines if there's more people competing for the same number of jobs. And we just saw massive layoffs across a number of very large companies because AI is replacing jobs.
Right.
So it is driving unemployment higher, and unemployment is a deflationary indicator.
Can I argue the opposite end of that?
Go on.
You
let's
talked
do
about
it.
The lower end of the labor force, right? But if you look at like the really super high skilled, technical, like scarce type of jobs, right? So these would be like people that are maybe in like chip design, right? Or cloud specialists, maybe even like machine learning engineers. Like that sector of the workforce, I think you're seeing wages push higher because like this is an AI race, right? And in the race, you're trying to get the best of the best. And so wages are going up in those areas because you're trying to get more and more people to fill those spots so that you can win the race. So I agree. The lower end of the workforce where stuff can be automated away, we're going to see job loss there. But I think we see an inflationary push because the pay is going to go up on those higher end jobs because you're going to want to get people.
Fun. Now we're having, this is going to be fun. Now we're having sort of point counterpoint.
Yeah. So maybe it's just like, because maybe it's like kind of a wash,
well,
right?
Well, I heard the opposite though. It's very interesting. I haven't heard that there's more job creation for those competitive positions. What I've heard is the handful of positions that are left, the people are all competing for those jobs, but that AI is even taking over a lot of coding jobs, for example. Hmm. So jobs that were traditionally, you know, these were the Google and Facebook jobs where you had software engineers, and AI is able to code and replace them in many cases. And so even those higher end jobs are some of the jobs that are on the chopping block right now.
Hmm.
So it's interesting. I mean, yes, you need to have the right people. And let's be real for a minute. AI is still a ways off from taking every human job. I don't actually foresee that happening. I think that there's a diminishing marginal return to how much energy AI requires. And, you know, if you turn everything into AI, right, this is my long-term play on this, is if everything becomes AI-driven, but it takes all this energy to fuel AI and robots, and then there's no people, well, the AI and the robots aren't the economy, right? They don't require money or anything like that to exist. So they don't really have to trade for other skills. Well, the economy is created because humans need an economy in order to keep functioning. So I look at this and I think at some point, if the price of power goes up too much and the price and humans have no money left, there is no economy. And so what's the point?
I mean, I think even bigger than just the power is like the infrastructure demand, right? Because when you're building this out, right, like you're physically building it out. It's not just everything's in a cloud somewhere. There's data centers that are popping up. So you look at like the construction side of thing, like land, like you're buying up land, you're building buildings. And so it's not just more electricity, it's also more cooling, more semiconductors. And so it's kind of a big push where all this money's going in, and then inflation trickles down through that where it's like, well, if there's this huge demand, the price can kind of creep higher. And I think NVIDIA is kind of experiencing that, right? Where they have a product that everyone wants, and so they can charge crazy prices and people will pay it because they really want the chips.
Well, I think that one, by the way, this wasn't the purpose of the show, but it's fun for everybody to know we are paying attention to this. NVIDIA has, there's kind of a, I'm going to call it an incestuous deal, right? And I'm using mm-hmm. that word because it's inflammatory. You've got scenarios like, so OpenAI, which, you know, Microsoft, I believe, owns OpenAI right now.
Mm-hmm.
And, or at least a huge chunk of it, right? Microsoft has a big interest in it. So they bought in and they've got a big seat at the table there. And so Microsoft is giving, puts money into OpenAI. OpenAI has to buy chips from NVIDIA. But then we get Oracle making a deal with OpenAI where they give OpenAI a bunch of money and Oracle, so it's this round robin. You can imagine, so Microsoft hires Oracle for something. Oracle buys the chips from NVIDIA. NVIDIA puts the chips to work for OpenAI, which, you know, Microsoft is buying the OpenAI stuff. And so everybody's spreading the money back around in a circle. So I use the example this way. If there's three people, so Matt, mm-hmm. if you sell Justin a boat and then I buy the boat from Justin, and then you buy a boat from me, and it's the same boat. Did anybody make any money?
No.
No, we just passed everything around,
correct.
Right? And I don't know why I chose boat in this example, but that's kind of the thing, is if OpenAI, if Microsoft makes a deal with Oracle to invest $300 million in them, and Oracle buys, you know, has a deal with, all the deals are cross-pollinated. I wish I actually had brought the outline to say it, but basically, we're not really creating new money, but everybody's reporting sales because everybody's buying from the other person next to them, and it's a big round robin.
Mm-hmm. And venture capital looks good for a moment.
Yeah. And so I think about that and I go, well, so if that's a big portion, if that the Magnificent Seven is this huge chunk of the S&P 500, and that's kind of how we've gauged success in the marketplace, go, well, a lot of that's everybody sort of sharing the money that's in their own system.
Mm-hmm. That, it really is.
That's a weird one because there's a lot of leverage. Yeah, these companies are making billions. So the difference between this and the dot-com environment is that there's actual earnings. But I think that you're seeing OpenAI starting to run out of people that are going to take the deal.
Do you think
that's starting to get weird?
Do you think that's why we've seen gold continue to push higher and higher and higher? Because, you know, people are looking at this and saying this is like a safer zone to play in. Like, they perceive it that way, not that it is, but they're like, wow, you know, these valuations keep getting steeper and steeper. The money keeps going back and forth between all the tech stocks. And then they're looking at like places to go that are outside of equities, and they're like, well, gold. Or do you think it's more of like China ramping up their supply? And so now there's less supply available, and that drives the price. Or is it all of the above?
I was going to say, can I just say yes?
Yeah, I think you can.
I kind of say yes to a lot of reasons, but I think it starts with, all right, this is going to be, here's the fun one. Let's do this. I'm going to drop just a bomb that's going to make everybody on the radio cringe mm-hmm. and say, it starts with COVID-19.
I was going to tie into that.
The price of gold and COVID-19. Mm. And if you want to know what the heck I mean, you have to stick around. I'm going to take our break right now. We'll come back and I'm going to explain to you how COVID-19 and China and Bitcoin are all driving gold.
All right.
Stick around. We'll come back. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Welcome back to the True Wealth Radio Show. Dave Littlejohn in studio with
Matt Dixon.
Okay, Matt, you're telling me everything's fine, but it's not fine. Right?
Yeah, just say it in a calm voice and it's fine.
Yeah, just don't. These are not the droids you're looking for. So, did I mention nerdy? So, okay. We talked about it at the break. We want to tie all this together. You said, why are people, like people buying gold?
Yeah, right?
They're buying gold. What's the story with that? And you said, is it for, I mean, what are all these reasons? Why are people buying gold?
Yeah, I mean, we've seen the news articles that China has over 2,000 tons of it now in their central bank or whatever. But my greater theory is that one of the biggest reasons that we're seeing gold prices go higher is because of the dollar continuing to weaken, right? So I think this year, if I remember correctly, so far this year we've lost about 12% of the dollar's value. And the analysts are saying that next year it's going to be around another 10% slide. So in 2 years, you're going to see roughly a quarter of the value of the dollar gone, right? So your dollars are worth 75% of what they were worth, roughly. Okay. And so I think, in my mind, what we're seeing is people are like, well, where do I want to put my money if it's not in U.S. dollars? And they're not buying euros. They're not buying the yen. They're just saying, well, what other asset classes are available? And insert gold. They go and they buy gold because that's what they've done for a lot of years, and okay, it's what they know. So you see gold rise, and then gold had a crazy run, right? Mm-hmm. And then lagging behind it, but now up like what, almost 100% for the year, silver. So silver is also climbing. So the precious metals have got a little bit of a nod because people don't want to hold dollars. They want to hopefully hold something that's not going down in value, but going up. So money going out of dollars and into gold and silver.
Okay, let's unpack this. Let's roll the clock back to 2019.
Okay.
All right, everything
the magical
is,
year. Everything is butterflies and dandelions, okay?
Yes, yes. So we're rolling the clock back nearly 7 years now, and everything is just humming along.
And then Wuhan.
Right. And of course, we're getting to the end of the first Trump presidency.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And 2020 comes along and we think, huh, everything is fine. But we get, well, there's this virus that's spreading. Right. COVID-19.
Mm-hmm.
And somewhere in early March of 2019, the news starts to come out in a cycle that's like, this is pretty terrible, and it may kill a third of our population, or what, or something like really, you know, exotic and terrifying.
Right. Something that'll make you stay in your house.
And then we do something unprecedented in generations, and we just shut the economy down.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we joke about it. It's like when Microsoft throws a blue screen up. It's like, I don't know, have you tried turning it off and back on again? And we try to do that with the economy. And, of course, it broke a lot of stuff. And when it did, for a while, people couldn't go to work. And then the government got this brilliant idea, let's just give people money. Since they couldn't work, we'll just
give
them money.
I don't know if we should throw brilliant into there, but we'll okay. Sure.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, if the quote. Sarcasm didn't come through, sorry. That was the solution, was we just gave money away.
Yeah.
And effectively, we conjured money. But we didn't just conjure and print money. We also did it through debt instruments, too. And we extended a ton, and essentially we created over the next roughly 2 years to 2.5 years about 25% of all the money in existence for U.S. dollars. So we increased the money supply by about 25%.
So when you hear statistics like the dollar's worth 25% less, it's not shocking.
Well, this is the thing. I bet you I could go back and mine radio shows from when we made these predictions.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, inflation's coming.
Yep.
And everybody, a bunch of people like, well, okay, whatever. I still want the check, right? Everybody took the money. And then later, inflation shows up. And how did we see it? First, housing prices went bananas.
Yep.
Yep. We saw that section of the market move. Why? Because rates were still super cheap anyway.
Yeah.
And now everybody was going to work at home models, and everybody said, I'm getting out of the city. And so they bought up everything in suburbia, and the prices rocketed up.
Yep.
And prices in the cities collapsed for a while. And then we turned the economy back on, We didn't unprint the money. And rates were still low for quite some time. And then people, when they went back to work, had the money that was given to them, plus they were making money again. And so what did they do? They just kept going. And we saw real estate shoot up a bunch, right? It really did go up a bunch. I remember because I sold, I'll share numbers, what the heck. I sold a house that we bought in 2005 for $325,000, and we sold it in 2018 for $350,000, 12 years later, right? Or 13 almost years later. That same house 2 years later resold for over $500,000.
Yeah.
So that's crazy inflation. There's just crazy inflation that we could go for 12-something years and the house barely appreciated, and then it grew orders of magnitude in the next 2 years. So that's the impact of printing money and throwing it into the economy.
Well, and then it, yeah.
And what everybody does is they tend to blame whatever they see in the moment, but they don't look at the movement. And so the moment suggests, like right now, okay, well, let me pick political flavor of the day and blame them for everything, but not look at the history that brought this point upon us.
Right.
And then, and so people are constantly getting blamed for prior activities, whether it belonged to them or not. And that's how most Americans are fickle about data. This was not a surprise, people. Inflation was absolutely foretold and inevitable when you make that much money printing.
Mm-hmm.
The same way that rate cuts are darn near inevitable because the federal government has only two possible things that it can do. It must either increase the economy without increasing its cost of debt service to the point that we can somehow get ahead of the debt service costs for our national debt, or it must hyperinflate away the value of the currency to afford the debts it has taken on, which means that everybody that's loaned money is going to get screwed, or we go structurally bankrupt. There's not a lot of options. How long does it take? I mean, that sounds really inflammatory, right? Like, God, did you just say that on air? It's like, this isn't rocket science, folks. You cannot have an economy with a debt service that's more expensive than the economy is capable of paying for. It's not structurally possible. And so when we reach a point that it is impossible to pay it back, everybody can cry about it and blame whoever the person is that's in the position of catching the arrows, but they didn't necessarily cause much of this at all. And we're all guilty of it, right? Everybody voted for the people that kept recklessly spending on both sides of the aisle forever. So pound sand if you're partisan about this. It's just broken. And literally, we spend more on debt service for the national debt than we spend on our military.
Yeah.
So when people are like, well, we spend this much money on war, you know, I got news for you. If we took all of that money away from the military, it's still not enough to pay the national debt on its own.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, and if we don't have a military, let me tell you, the rest of the world's going to destabilize quick because most of the world rents our military.
Correct.
So that's it. So why gold? Because gold is tangible. It is very difficult to duplicate. It is very small.
It is historical currency.
Historically been stable as a currency. It's agreed upon by multiple countries that it is, in fact, a currency, which means it's transcending individual political boundaries. And you can't really legislate it out of existence, which you can do with digital assets like Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. Bitcoin has all of the features of being a finite amount of supply, and it is decentralized, but you can still outlaw it. And you could say, well, you could outlaw gold too. I said, yes, and then you can take the gold and go somewhere else. You know, you can bootleg it elsewhere. Well, you could do that with Bitcoin. Yes, you can. But what does Bitcoin get denominated in? It has to typically be denominated in other currencies in order to spend it in most cases. Mm. So it's just... it's challenging. Incidentally, you brought something up that I think is a really cool point, man.
What's that?
You said that it's like for millennials and younger, Bitcoin is just an alternative to gold.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, the baby boomer generation loves its gold. Millennials love Bitcoin. And kind of at the end of the line, what are both doing? Just a way to hold something as an asset class that isn't dollars.
Well, I think it's a way to hold assets, an asset class that's supposed to behave independent of fiat.
Right, exactly.
However, the reason I brought this point up and I thought it was really clever of you is, if you notice, there's actually not a very high correlation between gold and
Bitcoin. Yeah, I mean, gold continued to climb higher while Bitcoin went from, what, 120-something down to 89?
It was over 124 to 91 today. It was lower. So Bitcoin's really slid in the past. Like gold in the past 6 months is up 25%. If I look at Bitcoin in the last 6 months, it's up 25%. So it's really interesting how close they are. But if we look at the last 1 month, gold is still up 5% in the last month. Bitcoin in the last month is, it's up about 5% too. That's pretty wild. It's wild because if I'm trying to figure out like where the peak was, let me make sure I'm looking at the right thing. Bitcoin's down 10% for the last month. Okay. I'm just not looking at the next.
I was going to say, that sounds more likely.
Bitcoin's down 10% and gold's up 5. So pretty significant delta between the two over the last month. Mm-hmm. That's not real high correlation right now.
No.
Anyway, we're running a little long on the segment here. We just kind of really got into the gold thing. But I guess we talked about, we want to say, how does COVID-19 and Bitcoin and gold and interest rates all tie together, and that's really your answer right there.
Mm-hmm. I think so. How about this? When we get back, should we talk about the gold standard of investing in crazy times and what people should be doing right now?
Yeah, I think we ought to. Like, does gold have a role? That kind of thing. Yeah, let's look into that. But yep, as you can tell by the music, we got to take our last break. So we will do that now. Stick around. I am Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
You got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Hey, gang. Home stretch here of the True Wealth Show. And we're just trying to wrap up this idea that the Federal Reserve, it's not settled whether or not we're going to get a rate cut in the near term. We thought maybe no initially. Like the jawboning is no rate cuts. The markets say that jury's still out. We could still see a rate cut.
Do you think if we do get a rate cut that it could be like a recessionary flag where it's like, oh boy, like there's not enough spending going on. We're cutting rates to try and incentivize the consumer to spend. So like recession flag?
Sure. I mean, I do, but I also think that by the time rate, because they're usually trailing indicators.
Sure.
You know, so we may already be in recession by the time that happens, and this is just a way to kind of goose the economy to get it going again.
Yeah.
I do know, one of the things I said in the last segment that's, we have this structural problem, and hyperinflation is a way out, but it's one of the optimists would say this is where AI may be able to help, this sort of radical productivity increase that could change the balance of things. But it would have to be a pretty radical productivity increase to overcome the structural elements that are going on in the economy right now. More likely, I think there's going to be this need for some austerity. Like we really are going to have to pare some government programs back and get a lot smaller government.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have to free the private sector up a little bit so it's not as restrained by certain regulations that just add cost burden to it. And that it may be something that you use a machete first and then use a scalpel later because there's just so much that's holding things back. The structural problems are a genuine concern,
mm-hmm.
and the folks that don't believe that are, I think, blissfully naive,
mm-hmm.
Or they're worse. Is like it's sort of willfully deceptive.
Yeah,
there's just you cannot have the type of both unfunded liabilities and off balance sheet liabilities that we have, and not and sadly, like, you know, historically, I said there's only a handful of ways out. One that I didn't really say, but it's the most common, is war. Mm. You know, and that's something that we really don't want to see happen. But and it's, if it sounds like I'm being a pessimist, hey, look, there have been many, many times throughout history where currencies have been reset and human life did not stop. Everybody was not wiped out. And then like a whole reset, it meant that assets had to be changed and repatriated into different currency values, that kind of thing. So these are survivable events. It's just that there's significant political upheaval and it changes lifestyles and changes cultures and that kind of thing.
Do you think if you live to the ripe age of 93 that the dollar will still continue to be stable and just chugging along?
No.
Fair.
No. I mean, that sounds really cold.
I just like that you're able to be like, no.
Yeah, I honestly don't think there's the political will. I think it's going to be foisted upon us, and I think you're going to have some future young generations that are pretty angry. But there's an old expression, I think it's, you know, like kind of a proverb thing, and we can just use this with people, but it's the example is with men, and it says, hard times create hard men. Hard men create good times. Good times create soft men. Soft men create hard times. It's a cycle, right?
Yeah.
And we're in this time of unprecedented convenience and comfort.
Yeah.
Right? We just are so, everything is so easy and so comfortable that we invent things to have social complaints about. Where, you know, in Africa, there are people that don't have clean water. In the United States, it's almost like weird lifestyle choices, unless you have a mental illness. Like we have this incredible social safety net. We have incredible comfort in most of our lives, incredible convenience in most of our lives. And so the level of hardship is mostly conjured for social reasons. Like we just kind of create conflict in order to complain. But there's so little to really complain about.
Yeah.
And so when I look at that, I think at some point, the avoidance of the hard decisions and the inability to take our medicine will come back to bite us.
Mm.
I can't say when. It's just, I don't see how it doesn't.
Yeah.
And if that makes me a pessimist, I don't think it's pessimism. I think it's just kind of realism. And
well, sometimes the pessimistic or realistic side causes you to invest in ways that are a little bit more logical and founded in a reason than just a hope and a prayer and, you know, blind.
You know what I mean?
Like, oh, it's just going to be fine and it doesn't matter, you know.
Well, and here's the thing. It doesn't mean that there's no opportunity.
Correct.
Okay? It really doesn't. Now, there are certain environments where there is no opportunity. I think if you're in North Korea, it's a pretty brutal regime where you just don't get a lot of choice and there's a lot of hardship in that environment. Okay? That's not what the United States is like. But I do think people are sort of naive.
There's always opportunity. Yeah.
Well, there's still opportunity now. It's possible to lose it. That's the funny thing. Like, when you have people that, you know, I'll say it on air. Like, you have people out there, like, actually calling for communism. Like, we should be communists in the United States. And I go, there is no point in history where that's ended well.
Nope.
This just never happened. And the results are really, really awful. And so the people that are saying that, again, as big as your hearts may be, you're just not looking at reality. You're not a realist. You are an optimist and an idealist, but not a realist.
So if someone wants to work with an advisor that isn't a woke communist, what do they do, David?
Yeah. Interview people, right? And ask the questions for real and ask for transparent answers. I know you're hinting, like, how would they reach us?
Yeah.
Because we're not those. That's just not our values proposition. And candidly, if that is yours, we're just not going to be a good fit for you.
Yeah.
But if you're like, hey, no, I like realistic folks here and I want folks that... We're not pessimists, believe it or not. I think there's huge opportunity. And I still think, how long does the currency last? Decades, mm-hmm. right? And so I think there's lots of opportunity to make hay. And there are still ways to kind of socially revitalize the country and restabilize around some, you know, more long-lasting principles. So I don't think we're out like it's hopeless mm-hmm. at all. Like, quite the opposite. I'm like, no, I'm still pretty optimistic about the future. But not about the economic system, the way it operates. Like, I think we're going to have a reset at some point, and we're going to realize that you can't borrow from your great-great-grandkids into prosperity.
Right.
Yeah. without harming your great-great-grandkids. I'll just put it that way. Right? Maybe it's great for you, but for the people behind you, you are screwing them. So,
fair enough.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, if you want to talk to us about this, by the way, we said, what's the role of gold in a portfolio? I think it does have a role as a small protectionary piece. I think folks that make their entire investment gold, it's like anything else. If you're not diversified, you are probably setting yourself up for heartbreak later.
Yeah.
So there are lots of investments that have outperformed gold this year, right? Lots of things have made more money than that. There are lots of things that have made more money than Bitcoin too. So keep in mind that, you know, we hear things that are flashy and headliney, but that doesn't mean that it's the only opportunity set up.
Right. So, true.
Yeah. Matt, let's do the thing where we tell them how to reach us.
Yeah. Why don't you shoot us an email at info@littlejohnfs.com, or you can call or text the phone number at 541-375-0898.
Okay. Now, we got a little time lap. Somebody does this, what happens?
Nothing. It just goes into the abyss, and we forget about you. No.
Thanks.
Typically, what we try and do is we'll give you a call. We'll see how we can help you out. If we feel like there is a way to help you out, we like to, you know, just bring you in for a Zoom call or a chat in person, and just kind of look at, you know, where you at in life, and if there's a way to help, and if there is, cool, and if not, no harm, no foul. We don't charge to do a consultation. We just want to try and help you out. And oftentimes there's people that, you know, we can't necessarily directly serve, but we point them in the right direction and get them in a good spot. So
it's true. And so I also tell people sometimes maybe you don't know where to start. It's like, I have financial questions. I can tell you what we're not. You know, some people call us and, can you help me make a budget? It's like, it's not that we can't. It's not really the service that we do. We're not debt consultants or something like that. We are for people that are doing investments. But nevertheless, if you're not sure where to start, give us a call and we'll at least help you find the right place. And if it's us, wonderful. If not, you'll be one step closer either way.
There you go.
With that, I see that we are out of time. So thanks, as always, for tuning in. Until next time, I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you've been listening to True Wealth on this station.